Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic dust discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when you're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you hit play on your iPod, iPad, or whatever device you're listening to the show on. Patrick Ood, who's on our show, met me. We met for the first time at Georgetown's Advanced E-Discovery conference at a party, the infamous pizza parties, which used to be held at Dan Regard's house back in maybe 2006. And Patrick's also was the on the second live broadcast I ever did when I helped to launch BNA's E-Discovery broadcast series, which is a show that can be found here in the archives of ESI Bytes. This is, however, Patrick Ood's first ESI Bytes program. It's long overdue, but I'm glad we finally rectified that omission on this program. And today we're doing a show to talk about the eDiscovery Institute's new study on TAR, which was a bake-off of sorts between different TAR providers trying to showcase their tools in an effort to gain business from the study's sponsor, Oracle. Since TREK has been in hibernation for the past few years, the industry has really needed a good study to reinvigorate us, and this study seems to have hit the market and in filling this void. And before we jump into the study, let me introduce Patrick. Patrick Ood's Senior Special Counsel for Electronic Discovery at the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. He is, of course, not on the show in that capacity at all. He's also the co-founder of the Electronic Discovery Institute, a nonprofit organization that conducts studies of litigation process for the benefit of federal and state judiciary. He speaks frequently on e-discovery topics nationally and is one of the pioneers in the field. So we're glad to have you on the show, Patrick. And if you could start off by telling me the story behind this recent EDI study, whose idea was it? How did it develop?
Sure. Thanks, Carl. And as you pointed out earlier, I'm here on my own capacity, and I don't represent the agency or the commission, and my words are my own. But the idea actually started a little over 2 years ago when Pallab Chakraborty at Oracle had a data set from a former Sun Matter where he thought would be ripe for some subsequent analysis of the technology-assisted, computer-assisted predictive coding tools. So he reached out to me, and we came up with this idea to do yet another study of what we did back years ago for the MCI acquisition data. That was EDI's first study. So what really happened was we were really trying to build on top of the work of Jason Baron, Maura Grossman, even William Weber's recent papers have been great, but we've really been trying to build on the work of other people and our former work in this space to really assess not just the accuracy or cost of the tools, but to look at sort of the different types of things litigators look at when they're reviewing documents for litigation. So Pallab and I then reached out to Professor Gerd Infanger and Professor Peter Flynn at Stanford University through the General Counsel of Oracle to sign on as our chief scientist, and then we designed the protocol and study around the data and are looking forward to subsequent work.
So that's great. I was at Georgetown at the Advanced E-Discovery Institute conference in mid-November, and the headline story sitting on everyone's chair, it seemed like there for 800 of the attendees, was this story from LTN, EDI Oracle study, humans are still essential in e-discovery. What do you see in the results from phase one that led LTN to that conclusion?
So it's interesting that there's a lot of community buzz about new technology and how it's there to save the day, but the results that we're seeing, at least in the preliminary results, we're seeing that the human element is just as important as the technology element. And what really drives that is those providers that staffed more senior people, partner level, really subject matter experts on the actual review itself, versus more junior document reviewers or professional document reviewers, actually performed significantly better when comparing back to the original review. So you have to remember, this first phase, we're only comparing back to what was produced to the Department of Justice in this litigation. So, there's a lot of debate of whether or not that is a valid comparison. But at the very least, we wanted to, in phase one, do this comparison back to the original review, because an attorney kind of signed on the dotted line that they conducted a reasonable inquiry in response to the Department of Justice request.
Yeah, that would lead us back to the first CDI paper on the inconsistency between reviewers' issue. But we'll be interested to see, in that next phase when you actually try to come up with maybe a consensus of what the answers are. But I have a question on that later on. Another conclusion one could reach, especially from the results of Tech Team 19, which used only one senior attorney and performed the best on finding responsive documents and privileged material based on 64 and a half hours of training by the attorney, is that humans are critical, but in smaller numbers. Did that result surprise you at all?
I think that's consistent with existing research, and I keep going back to the sort of senior attorney being the important component, right? So other teams that also had senior attorneys, but there was more than one, also performed pretty well. It's not necessarily the army of one discussion, I think. I think it's more who are the people that you are putting in charge of the review. I think the second interesting component of this is the top performer of one senior attorney actually replicated best the review that was completed by a team of attorneys, and both contract attorneys and outside counsel from the prior matter. So it kind of leads to believe kind of two things, I think, that are kind of takeaways from that discussion. One, if we can say that first review was a good job, then that senior attorney performed best at matching that first review. And it kind of leads to say that Oracle's position that first review that was done many years ago was a very thorough job. So if that can be replicated by a senior attorney and those results come out very similarly, it leads us to believe that that both the senior attorney was paying attention and that initial team was paying attention to focusing on the responsiveness of the request.
Yeah, because you got to always remember there was a team on what is the gold standard. So I think that's interesting. Another interesting result that we talked about before we started the show here is the difference in resources spent by different teams. And I know there was a retraction you wanted to mention here from the article, but the range that was published in LTN was the high end of $1.5 million, $1,501,655, down to teams in the $45,000 range. I might add that team at the low end had much better results than the team which spent $1.5 million. First of all, the retraction, and then did that result surprise you?
Sure. So just last week, the most expensive provider came back and admitted that they didn't really follow the directions on how they were supposed to submit the invoice to us. So they actually included the cost of review, sort of linear human review, of the documents that were deemed as responsive to the computer-assisted review technology. So they included an extra $682,000 on top of the original sum that would have been a subsequent review even after the computer-assisted review to sort of double-check. So that number it's still high. It's still $819,000, but at least we know that that human element wasn't done on the responsive set. So that's something they said that they would typically do after they did the analysis, and that's why they submitted it in the invoice. But it wasn't something that was done in their response to this request.
Hey, that's actually a really important point there. I wanted to emphasize. You know, I've spent the past year as a side project training lawyers around the country on how to use technology assisted review in 9 different cities, and it's interesting to see that, you know, despite, you know, maybe cutting back on the number of people using TAR to train, but there's still, you know, $682,000 in review to do the final check responsiveness review, which I think most people would be doing. That's still a fair amount of review that's left. You know, TAR is not eliminating review, it's just culling.
Correct.
And, you know, so I think that's something that's worth emphasizing.
Yeah, and I think that we're not taking the position that a producing party should produce materials without looking at them first. So at least knowing that there is a line item out there for a subsequent human review after the computer-assisted review is helpful in knowing that that's something that typically happens when document producers produce large volumes of documents.
And another question about the makeup of the different teams I want to ask you is, when you look at studies like TREC, if you really look closely, there was always a big difference in resources spent on the study by different teams. You know, most of the entrants were academic programs or teams of students, or you might have a couple commercial enterprises involved. And in the TAR studies, you know, they might have just did one run. They weren't trying to win. They were just trying to test the tool, and you know, but in this situation, you had every entrant had a commercial focus, which is unique. So could you provide some general overview on the different teams that participated in the study?
Well, believe it or not, you know, even though there was a sort of a prize at the end of, you know, having the ability to talk to Oracle for Business, the majority of the participants actually were focusing on this as an academic exercise. And that's what I think was the most surprising, rewarding thing that both Pallab and I got from the teams. For example, some of the teams submitted multiple responses using different algorithms. So they wanted to check to see which of their tools is performing better on this particular data set. So there was also a business driver in that to help fine-tune their systems and to ensure that that they're putting the best foot forward with their clients. So, you know, we were very impressed with all of the teams and how quickly that they were able to respond. You know, some employed, you know, dozens of contract attorneys to do the seed set, but only used you know, maybe a few days of review. One provider, the bargain basement provider, we'll call them, they used a very small team of document reviewers that looked at a very small sample of documents and still came out with glowing results, is what I would think. So the level of sophistication of reviewers varied. The level of technology differences varied because there were all sorts of different providers, and then some providers were actually licensing the same technology and were performing differently. So that is also another reason that you know, even compounds the question that you asked earlier. The human element is extremely important, especially when you're painting with a very, very wide paintbrush.
Yeah, and you know, a question that just sort of struck me here is, you know, one of the things I asked in all of my boot camps were judges about this using a Daubert analysis of technology if someone challenges it. But it seems to me that's almost impossible to do, because if you're not looking at the conductor, who cares about the? I mean, you do care about the technology, but you're missing a big part of the puzzle by just focusing on, you know, the mechanics of the machinery, right? I mean, that's one interesting result from the study.
Exactly. So, and I think that the Dalbert issue is, folks were focused on that to attack junk science. And, there are two arguments. There's the sort of argument that discovery is a process. It's not, you're not really focusing on the evidence itself. You're focusing on the process that was followed. So that's why maybe the Dalbert challenges or hearing is not appropriate. On the other hand, some judges believe that they are entitled to this type of information, and they really could use the scientific education around the process. So I think the way that we come out with this is that we don't necessarily think a Dalbert challenge is necessary. We definitely don't want to prohibit or not allow the judge to have the ability to work on fact-finding about the process that was followed. So I think there's a happy medium here, and that sort of conversation that exists between the parties is more important than ever, so you don't get into a very expensive hearing process.
I wanted to ask you a last question. If there are any other results from the project you'd like to mention I haven't focused on yet. I mean, I can think of one already that, all of the entrants beat the dollar a doc, big number that people throw out is, sort of like that's what it costs to do traditional review. I think that's pretty compelling stuff. But is there anything else on the project that you'd like to mention that I haven't focused on yet?
Yeah, I think that you hit it on the head with that one figure. We also have to remember that there was no subsequent human review on the production set. So, making sure your outside counsel has a bit of education about what's going on out the door, I think, is important. So those cost figures weren't included in this. Also, remember, we're relying upon the initial review as the standard. So what's more important, I think, is the gold standard that Professor Glynn and Professor Infanger are coming up with, and that will be based upon subsequent human reviews, a topic authority determination, and the actual respondents themselves, all combined with the actual review that was done in the case. So they are going to create an amalgam of a gold standard and the defensibility around that that is much different than the work that we've done in the past, far different than the work that Trek has done in the past. And, it's just more research that's out there. We're not trying to debunk any work or to try and sort of outdo any work that anybody's done in the past. We're just sort of keep moving on our curiosity, and hopefully we'll find out more information that will help the community.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. We touched on there are other costs involved, because I remember when that New York Times article came out a few years ago that the machines are better than humans, and I happened to be in D.C., Chicago, and New York within 1 week period, and every large firm I was meeting with had set up task forces to explain to clients what really was happening, and there are certainly lots of other costs that you can't go down this list and say this is what it would cost. There's privilege reviews, there's responsiveness reviews, but it's awfully compelling stuff, for culling. I mean, I think this is a fantastic study. So what are the timeframes for the next phases to be completed? Do you have them sort of identified?
Yeah, so we are in the process of releasing the documents for human review right now to the human review teams. They should be submitting their results to us in the next month or so. We're hoping that they will have their answers in by legal tech, so we can actually publish some of the F values or the accuracy ratings, for lack of a better explanation, of the initial set, and then the professors will be working on those subsequent reviews to create the set of documents that topic authorities will be looking at. We'd imagine that our next results will be coming out in the next few months. Those results will be a combination of the human re-review teams, the original review and the actual technology providers. And then our final phase, hopefully hitting sometime in the summer, will be the topic authority analysis and then the final law review article around the whole process. And so we're really looking forward to wrapping that up.
Boy, after that, are we going to have a sort of a meeting on the island with people, you know, announcing the winner of like Survivor, you know? This is, and it's name a vendor. Anyway, well, you know, the last question I wanted to ask isn't about this study. You know, I first became familiar with EDI back when you came out with that first big study on humans do it at least as review at least, or machines do it at least as well as human reviewers. In fact, I remember using that study to look at some of the, you know, there was some surveying that I think you did on why people were not using TAR, and everyone was concerned about defensibility. And that's actually prompted me to start talking to judges and doing education with judges. So you guys have done a lot of great work over the years. My question is, tell me a little bit about the makeup of EDI these days. You know, I noticed Dan Kershaw's running a new business these days, and of course Herb's at Orchitect. And what is EDI today? Is it Patrick and a few other people, or you know?
Well, currently we have a staff now. We've hired Sarah Kelly from Georgetown recently to help us take on some of our new projects. We really moved forward with distance learning. We have an initiative that we're launching as we speak to do a lot of distance learning around 43 topics that we've selected. We've reached out to partners at law firms from all over the country. About 150 corporate counsel will be participating in it, and obviously some of the usual judges. We have a pilot that we've already completed on Federal Rule of Evidence 502, and the distance learning program should be launched in the second quarter of next year, 2014. And it's been a two-year program that we've been working on. Bob Owen from Sutherland is now our president. We're really excited that he's on board. He's provided great guidance to the organization. He's a big advocate for large data holders. So it's been a rewarding experience, and it's been nice to have Herb as a scientist on board with a lot of this work that we've done. And he continues to participate, but he did not participate in the study because we thought he should recuse from it because he has a business in the place. So he's not involved in the review study at all, but continues to assist us on Summit, on the Georgetown program that we work on, helps onboard Sarah, and helps the organization continue to grow. So we're really excited to have such a great team, and I'll continue to volunteer my time as long as people see that the organization is of value.
Well, it sounds like it's going strong. My last question is based on the common thread I share with you, Patrick, that not everyone knows. You, like me, cut your teeth in eDiscovery as a contract attorney before you moved on into Verizon and helped to provide some internal resources on eDiscovery, a role which you do today with the SEC. And, I had a similar background, and I at least with the contract attorney side before I became an entrepreneur. And personally, I believe that doing some review at some point in your career is some of the best training that you can have to truly understand eDiscovery challenges. So do you have any career advice for today's generation of reviewers based on what your research and experiences are telling you about future trends?
Well, I would say keep learning. One of the things that I did when I was, I graduated law school in 2001, right after 9/11. The market was, a horrible place to be in. So I decided to go back to school. So I enrolled into, on all things, a tax program at Georgetown. I was fortunate that I ran into the folks at Verizon that had the problems that they had at the time, and had a very rewarding career there, been very fortunate that way. And I think it's because I've continued to you know, reach out and learn new things and, you know, research things that I have questions about. So always strive for finding out, you know, new things about technology, new things about the law. Keep yourself curious. And, you know, I think that your career will definitely grow. I think that that's one of the main initiatives, believe it or not, that we had in developing the distance learning program, is that we wanted to provide a platform and access to the top minds in the country around e-discovery. So we built this you know, this platform that students can come to, and right now we're developing it in a zero cost methodology. So anybody that wants to learn about a particular subject matter will be able to just enroll in a class for free. You know, watch the class, and you know, you'll be able to see people like you know, myself, Judge Peck, Judge Facciola, David Greenwald is working on a privilege commentary and class. You know, some really bright minds, some of the top in the country are working on this program, and we're really excited to launch it. So as long as the you know, the funding stays there, we'll continue to push out the free education to the community. And we look forward to launching this in the second quarter of next year.
It's nice to have more free resources there. So I'll mention when you launch it, I'm happy to do a show. And you know, ESI Bites has always been free, and I've always thought that we need more education. You know, never hurts anyone. So well, I want to thank you for joining us here at ESI Bites, Patrick. It's been a very informative show, and it's always a pleasure to have you share with your knowledge with us and our listeners, and hopefully you'll be able to do some more shows with you later this year. I'd also like to thank our sponsor, Jurnov, for their continued support of ESI Bites. And to the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibites.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You can remember the show and website phonetically. It sounds out as Easy Bites of ESI information. So however you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bites to learn more about e-discovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.